Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main jet.
Echo Station 3TA. On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that crossfire, boys. Right now, I feel like I can take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. It's episode number 159. I am here tonight with Tim. Tim, how are you?
I'm tired. I'm good, but I'm tired. It's been a busy couple weeks.
Well, that's good. Busy's always good. Keeps you out of trouble.
And then today, for some reason, decided to do like a 7-mile hike. Even though I woke up exhausted. So it was good. It was good to be outside.
It was good weather for it, at least. You weren't out there sweltering like it was like last Thursday.
It was beautiful. Nice. Absolutely beautiful. Went up into the Adirondacks, did a hike that we've done many times before, nice area. So it was great.
Awesome. With us tonight, we have a special guest. We have Tom from Dispatch from the Front.
What's up?
Here with us tonight.
I'm glad that Tim didn't mandate that I be named Bail Antilles. Story that's to be explained further later.
We'll get to that, I think. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more about those details. Tom, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I haven't had the last 2 weekends like you have, Tim, but really the entire summer was just one set of poor planning. We had our daughter in June. And then turn and burn to do all the stuff at Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And then Dragon-Con really a month later. Yeah. And I will talk about my involvement there. But if I was just attending these things, it's exhausting enough. But finally, we've hit a period where I can just do all the normal. And I like come down and into the Star Wars area of the house. And I'm like, I don't have to plan something yet.
That's a huge weight off your shoulders. I hate that under the gun of planning for something last minute, or even if you're not planning last minute, just it always seems like everything gets right to the last minute. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. Yeah. I remember when I graduated college, I thought, oh, you know what? Never again. I have to worry about last minute, you know, getting a paper ready, prepping. And then,
womp.
It didn't happen. You know, business happens and papers are due and reports are ready to go. Like, oh, God. So let's see. You're here because of your involvement at DragonCon. And we have some cool Star Wars stuff to talk about there. And Tim, you were there as well, but you didn't have anything cool to do. You were just kind of participating.
I followed Tom around a lot.
Yeah, I was saying, you know, whereas Tom's a rock star, you were just a groupie.
Yeah. Yeah, I really was. I was a Tom groupie, which was fine. I mean, you know, he treated me well and you know, bought me a beverage and life was good.
Awesome.
We'll talk more about Dragon Con later, but it's big. I mean, this is they're not messing around. This is a serious con. This is a big con. Just kind of navigating the various buildings that this con is hosted in can be a little bit of a challenge, at least, you know, in that first day or so. And, you know, Tom kind of showing me around and showing me where things were was hugely valuable. That was an awesome help. So
cool.
You're too kind because you ignore the point. We're like rushing to get to a panel and Tim puts his trust in me. And I'll explain more about the layout of the convention.
We actually left the building that we were supposed to be in.
Completely the opposite way.
No, Tom, your health was better at this convention versus San Diego. You did okay. You didn't.
I didn't collapse. Nice. That's a plus. There was a Clone Wars panel, and I made it to it.
Awesome.
I'll put it that way.
Well, before we get to Dragon Con stuff, let's get right into our news for this week. There's a lot of little small things we can talk about here. This first one, with the upcoming release of the Solo movie on DVD and streaming this week and next week, I guess, this week for streaming, next week for Blu-ray and hard copies, We have a story from Ray Park, who kind of reveals about how he got pulled into Solo. This was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, he said it was very hush hush, very much, you know, on the QT. Couldn't even tell his wife and kids, yep. Which I think is wow. How do you wow. keep that a secret? I don't know how you do that.
Although they apparently figured it out.
Well, yeah, I mean, he does say at one point he did the happy dance and made lightsaber motions.
Yeah,
so
and he shaved his head and had a number of trips to London.
Right. I mean, I've shaved my head, but I don't go to London very often. So,
is a new G.I. Joe coming out? I don't know.
Did you guys have a chance to read this article?
Yeah, he. By the way, on an off note, if those of you that listen are on Instagram in any form or fashion, even if you don't post on there yourself, he is an absolute joy to follow. Oh, yeah. If you get on there for no other reason, yeah. He posts workout videos, stuff with his family, yeah. Stuff with his kids all the time. He's just like a really, really good guy and somebody that really opens up his personal life for folks to see.
That's cool.
I don't know if either of you guys have met him like at a con or anything. I have not, but I've heard that like that's how he is in person, that he's just a really like great, genuine person.
Yeah, I met him at, what was it, Star Wars Weekends back when they did that at Disney World. And to this day, I've got a lot of autographs. And normally you're lucky if they'll write, "May the Force be with you" or something like that on there. The Darth Maul autograph I have is just covered in notes that he wrote to me.
That's awesome.
And we sat there and we talked until the handler had to move us along. We were just
nice.
About everything. He's just a really, really genuinely nice guy.
That's awesome.
Nice. Very nice.
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to getting the Solo download. Anything extra is going to be cool. I can't wait to see the movie again. I've only seen it once in the theater, so... seeing this kind of stuff and hearing these stories just gets me pumped up for this movie coming out again. So,
yeah. So like Lou said, digital is this coming week. It's September 14th. Blu-ray is going to be September 25th. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I usually don't get digital, so I like to actually have it in my grubby little hands. So I'll be picking it up on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I probably will too. I've been doing digital for a while, but I don't know. I feel like I want that disc in my hands just in case something...
That offset makes it so, so tempting.
I know. That's what's got me all the time.
Oh, yeah. I got suckered into it. I was on a trip with my wife when I realized Rogue One was out on digital. And, of course, I like could not wait. And I was like, well, we have the plane ride home, so that just totally justifies the purchase. And she goes, well, then you're not going to buy the Blu-ray, are you? And I long pause. I said, well... We'll see.
How could you not? I mean, when you have them all lined up on a shelf and you're very obviously missing Rogue One, that would be silly.
I know. You sacrifice your fan card.
Yeah. I just don't know why it's coming out on Friday for a digital release. That seems... I'm used to Tuesdays, you know. So why Friday all of a sudden? But let's see. I forgot the Solo novelization is out. I've got to pick that up on audiobook.
Yep.
Have either one of you guys picked it up and read through that yet?
I've got it. I've got it on audiobook. This is, I'll talk more about it in, I guess, the Dragon Con section. But for the next few weeks, this is my respite from Star Wars reading. To keep up with the crush for this Dragon Con trivia contest, you've got to read all year long
to keep up
with the material that they're putting out. So I like to have a little bit of a respite, but the audiobook's good for commutes.
Yeah.
And then I've been suckered into buying all the hardbacks because they just look pretty on the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah. Same
they
here.
Do. I've refrained from buying the hard copies though. I've been doing the audiobooks now and I'm happy with just getting that content that way. In fact, I'm going back through the Aftermath trilogy at the moment. Because I feel like I didn't give it a fair chance the first time around. I'm enjoying it more the second time, I'll say that.
See,
I'm looking forward to the new stuff in Solo. I guess there's going to be some expanded stuff, and there's some more scenes that didn't make it into the movie. I'm excited for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm not opposed to audiobooks. I've done several, but I tend to kind of, I guess, the same thing with a Blu-ray. I like to have... that physical copy in my hand, and I like to read. And despite the amount of travel that I do, a lot of my drive time is usually podcasts. So, like even, you know, heading to, I was in Vermont this past weekend and burned through a lot of podcasts there and back again. And, but
I was going to say, you don't prop the book up on the dashboard, do you?
No.
Okay, good.
But I did finally finish the, Thrawn Alliances, novel, which was, I'm glad that I kept going with it because it wrapped up much better than it started. It was a good book. And, I will be picking up Solo sometime soon. I ended up going back to another book, which is not at all Star Wars related, that I wanted to finish because I interrupted reading that when Thrawn came out. So
the audiobooks are really, I'm with you, Lou. I really like the Star Wars audiobooks in particular. Mm. They're not, I haven't listened to a ton of audiobooks from other publishers, but, Del Rey really, really steps up the game.
They do.
In the audiobook arena. It really is worth your time. If you've got an Audible subscription or you've got, you know, somebody that has one and can get access, lawfully, of course, they're worth giving a shot. They really are more like radio dramas or full on audio productions than they are just somebody reading the mm-hmm. book. Mark Thompson is the voice actor that does the Solo novelization, and he's done awesome. Probably
he does a lot of the Star Wars stuff. Yeah,
he's probably done 2/3 of the readings, if maybe a little bit less, but he is, I would have him narrate my entire life. Yeah. Me pouring cereal in the yeah. morning. But he does all the voices, different voices for characters, and what's needed is when you go back and reread, maybe you pick up the hard copy and read it later on, his voice and the characterization he gives just gets stuck in your head, and he's good. And they've got sound effects and music, and it really is just high mm-hmm. class. So it's absolutely worth your time.
Certainly is. Speaking of books, we have the first Star Wars Archives coming out. This is a big, thick, pay by the pound coffee table book. And when I say pay by the pound, this is like, prime USDA, high grade beef, because this is gonna be a pricey book.
Yeah.
Now this is going to cover just 77 through 83, so just the original trilogy.
Yep. This is the first edition of the Star Wars Archives.
Right. Now it seems like, reading through this, and I'm looking at them, I'm going, I have other books like this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that gets me. It's like, I'm sure it's going to be more inclusive than other stuff I already own, but do I really need to buy another coffee table book just for some pretty pictures and stuff that maybe I didn't get the first time around? But this does look really sweet.
That's what you're buying it for this one. Because I think back, I've got they made a trilogy of the making of Star Wars books by, was it J.W. Rensler? Yeah, yep. Fantastic, just chock full of content. I mean, they've mined to the depths of all that making of stuff. But they're nice in hardcover, but it's not a beautiful, gorgeous coffee table book like this.
This is 604 pages. You can pick it up for $200 or $190 on pre-order, which is now available on Amazon, again, for pre-order. And it's going to be officially released on November 15. So the hope is, obviously, that this being the first edition, there will be several other editions covering, presumably after this, the prequel trilogy and then the sequel trilogy, and then maybe even another one covering animation, which would be cool if it covered.
That would be very nice. I would pick that up.
Covered the Clone Wars and Rebels, and of course, by the time it comes out, maybe it'll also be covering the Resistance.
Resistance, yep.
That may be done. I don't know what their release schedule is here. But of course, very similar, kind of what you guys mentioned, with these behind the scenes or making ofs. It's got script pages, production documents, on-set photography, stills, storyboards, concept art, movie posters, that kind of stuff. The book, it says here, the book also features an exclusive interview with George himself. So it looks pretty cool. It's one of those things that I'd love to, if I actually do see it in the wild in a bookstore, of course it'll probably be shrink wrapped. But I'd love to pick it up and at least flip through it just to say, hey, this is a pretty cool book. And I don't know that I'll be spending the $200 on it. Maybe I'm not a real fan. I don't know. But it certainly sounds tempting. But like you guys said, there's a lot of things that have been released that are similar to this.
Well, you know, and I would certainly, you know, put this on a Christmas list, maybe. Hint, hint. Mm-hmm.
Was Sharon in the room? No, I don't see her.
I thought she was. Damn it! But you know, it's a lot of money to spend on a book like this, and if there's going to be several more of these, you can think about there's $1,000 going away pretty quickly.
Wait,
what?
There's some really important news.
Yes.
Yesterday was your birthday, Lou.
It was.
Yes,
2 days ago.
Friday.
Happy birthday, Lou.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
I turned a big 50.
You don't look a day over 19.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
Do you get carded when you buy Darth Vader figures still?
I got carded somewhere recently. I was like, really? Really? Okay, sure. Here you go. You know, one last thing to say about this book, though. I'm going to be kind of miffed if I do plunk down the $200 and buy this, and then the next edition comes out and the book isn't the same format.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be the same size and shape and fit. It can't be different, right?
Yeah.
It's going to really tick me off if it is, though. Look, this one's 7 inches tall. This one's 12. Oh, it doesn't fit next to it. And oh, it doesn't even look the same. It's square versus rectangle. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can't put them next to each other on the shelf. It's screwed up.
Yeah, I know. First world problems. I'm sorry.
Your coffee table is just totally a mess.
Oh, boy. Tim, why don't you take this casting announcements one for episode 9?
Okay. So, episode 9 casting announcement. They are looking, this is a casting call, actually. They're looking for an actress to portray. A character which is being referred to right now as Karina. And of course, we know that oftentimes the actual names that they use in these casting calls are not the names that they are in the movie. But they are the character's purported to be a street smart character and a female lead 40 to 50 years. These are some other roles here.
Yeah, that was for Mara that was already been talked about before. But
yes.
Looks like Karina is a younger Charlize Theron. Okay. That's pretty specific, I guess. But street smart, sharp wit, good sense of humor, good comedic timing, strong voice. I mean, like anything else, you'd want to have a female actress cast, obviously. I mean, you want somebody strong and prominent.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say how big of a character this is, though. Is this a supporting role, or...?
This is a supporting role, yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, it says...
I'd like if this one was... I'm trying to think of... And I don't want to dive into too much speculation, but if we're going to see more of Black Squadron, and this is Kari Kuhn from the comics, because we've seen Jess Pava. They're not going to replace her, obviously.
Yep.
But... Presumably the remaining scraps of the resistance will see a little more screen time, and Kare's had a pretty prominent role in the Poe Dameron comics. So
that's a good thought.
Both start with K. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, cool. So more people in the show.
Yeah.
Let's see. You guys looking for a job on the West Coast?
No.
No.
Thanks,
you could try. You could commute. Come on, Tim, you can do that. You like to fly around.
The
Lucas Museum of Narrative Art has got some job postings. We're still years away from this thing opening up. It's 2022 is when this is going to open, but they're looking for people. I mean, obviously you got to plan ahead. But an inventory technician, director of communications and marketing, director of finance, and then curators, multiple curators probably. So if you're in that area and into this kind of stuff like we are, I think it'd be a pretty cool thing to do. But
yeah.
Inventory technician sounds amazing. Like it's in any it other context. Boring,
but you know what? The center you're going, wait, what's the inventory? Oh, wait a minute. This could be really fun.
Yeah. Think about the scene at the end of Indiana Jones where they're hauling, you know,
yeah,
hauling it away. You're that guy pushing the cart.
Yeah.
Except you get to see all the stuff that's in the box.
Absolutely. But if you're interested in details here, lucasmuseum.org is the place to go.
Awesome. Kathleen Kennedy is going to receive an award, the Academy's Thalberg Award. This is an award to honor creative producers whose body of work reflects consistently high quality of motion picture production, which so far I think she's done very well. This is going to be awarded at the Governor's Awards on November 18th. And this is with her and her producing partner, Frank Marshall. A little bit of nepotism going on there. This is also her husband.
And they've done a lot of stuff together. And, you know, even her Lucasfilm work aside, she just has an incredibly impressive resume. And, you know, she was really brought up into the industry working for Steven Spielberg and worked on a lot of his really noted films. And then kind of went off on her own doing things, some of which were actually still working for Spielberg, but as the producer of her own right, along with sometimes with Frank Marshall on various films. And she just has an incredible portfolio, and this is absolutely deserving. This is going to be awarded at the 10th Annual Governor's Awards. This is the governors of the Academy. They're kind of like the board on November 18th. So I think it's very much deserving. I know, you know, already from seeing some stuff on social media that, you know, the haters of the current Star Wars stuff are very much against her getting this. When even if you don't happen to like a couple of her movies, there's just so much out there that she has within her resume, her portfolio, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. So,
I mean, you look down through the rest of this list here and, you know, the Kennedy Marshall Production Company, been involved with The Sixth Sense, mm-hmm. Seabiscuit, Munich, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. They've also included Congo, the Bourne films. I mean, there's just tons of stuff on here that is, I think, worthy of her being recipient of this award.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And if for those that are out there that are so bent out of shape over The Last Jedi, or you could hate every Star Wars movie that's come out under her watch thus far, but to take it to the level where you were, I guarantee you this event, the folks that are up in arms about her getting the Thalberg Award couldn't name one other Thalberg Award recipient. I know I can't.
Yeah, I can't either, right.
I watch movies all the time. I can't name anybody. But if you're at that level of vitriol, it's time to step back and re-examine things, because if I guarantee you, if it were in any other context and you saw the resume divorced from the person and your own personal feelings, you'd be like, why didn't he or she get this award mm-hmm. 5 years ago, yeah. 10 years ago? So it's a sad but a unique introspective into that world of hate that's continuing to bubble.
Yeah. And it's funny. I've had such a good interaction in this last week with Star Wars fans in a different context than Instagram, Twitter, and the general, you know, online sources. It's really refreshed my enthusiasm for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I've been interacting with some groups here in Connecticut on costuming and so forth, and it's just been a pleasure dealing with these people and people that are truly excited about Star Wars and not necessarily hating anything particular for a movie or anything, you know, in specific reasons. So it's been very refreshing for me this week.
That's good. That's really good to hear. That's very good to hear, Lou.
Let's see. In Star Wars Galaxies news, Disney Parks, we have a couple different topics here. John Williams is going to score the Galaxy's Edge Park. seems awesome. a bit ambitious. I mean, scoring a film is one thing, but scoring a theme park, kind of cool. You know, one thing about this, and I haven't actually delved into this whole article here yet, but you know, one of the things that Disney does really well, I think, if you've ever been to one of the parks or any one of their environments, you know, everything about it, from the decor to the people to the way you flow through a park or flow through a building, they've had that all thought out.
Yeah.
And my most recent thing with Disney has been the cruise ship I was on. And from section to section of the ship, the music played a big part. And they had a... not a show, but a tour of the ship called The Art of the Theme. And it was kind of talking about, you know, going from one section of the ship to another and how they kind of made it so kids didn't want to walk into the more adult sections of the ship just because it seemed like the corridor was really long, or it's, you know, things they did to make it so that it was, you knew you went from one section to another. Mm-hmm. The music would subtly change from one section to another. You didn't notice an abrupt change in music, but all of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, this music is totally different than where it was in the other part of the ship. I didn't notice it changed.
That's
neat. Yeah, so having their expertise with this and then putting John Williams' music to that, I think is going to be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's very clear that they're doing everything that they can to make this a very immersive experience. And having John Williams involved in it, I think, is great. Because, you know, after episode 9, I'm not so sure that we're going to be getting much more of him, at least mm-hmm. his involvement in a lot of new Star Wars types of things. So I think this just is a wonderful thing that contributes to his legacy. And just kind of the more things that I've been aware of over the last several months with theme parks, whether it's been Star Wars related or otherwise, realizing how much work is done with things like scoring and the voiceover work for animatronics and that kind of stuff by, you know, very prominent people, and oftentimes the actors who actually play those parts in animation or in a movie. And there's just so much that goes into making it immersive and making it genuine. And I think that this is a great contribution to Galaxy's Edge.
You might even say, Tim, they spared no expense.
that's a different
franchise. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was Jurassic. Sorry. Also, we have the fact that we're getting something we've never gotten from a Disney park before. They're going to get us drunk. They are now saying that they are, you know, updating with the times, I guess, and changing to what the public is demanding. The Galaxy's Edge Cantina will be the first location in any Star Wars park, or any, sorry, Disney park, to serve alcohol to the general public.
I think that's Disneyland, because you can get, Epcot is obviously a major exception, but in Disney World.
Okay.
Even in Hollywood Studios, I'm thinking of, I can't remember the name of it, and Disney aficionados are going to blast me for this, but there's a small cantina type restaurant that that has changed names a mm-hmm. few times, but it's right across from where Star Tours is, and you can get beer there. Okay. But Disneyland, I don't know that you can get it anywhere in the okay. park.
Yeah, for Disneyland, yeah, this article, getting this off of The Independent, and they mentioned specific to Disneyland, basically the only other place to get alcohol is as a member of the exclusive private Club 33, which can give you access to alcoholic drinks. Other than that, there has been nothing else in Disneyland itself okay. that serves alcohol, much less to kind of the general visitors. So it's going to be the cantina here is going to be named Oga's Cantina. And so that should contribute to the fun. Of course, I'm sure it'll be a, you know, $10 beer, but
it's been really hard to get yourself inebriated unless you have a lot of cash with you.
Do they accept Republic credits? That's what I'll be carrying. They need something more real.
Yep.
Okay, and finally here, we have one last story about our friend John Boyega. He is getting into, you know, more than just acting. He's going to be, is he a producer on this, or is he?
Yeah, he's going to be the executive producer on it.
So this is a horror film that his production company is taking on, called A Spriggan. Am I saying that right, Tim?
Yeah, which sounds very English, which is exactly what it is. It is, in fact, it's a it has to do with monsters and like a fairy tale world and that kind of stuff. Now, Boyega has done some production stuff. He was a co-producer on Pacific Rim Uprising.
Yep.
And so he's getting more into it, which is, I always think it's neat to see people continuing to branch out within within a particular profession. And I think it can give them some longevity and it can provide them with a lot of different options. So, yeah, he's doing this. It is a UK fantasy horror film, which I have to imagine will get a US release. I would hope. I think it'd be, great to see.
I would hope so, yeah. I mean, he's certainly got a presence here in the U.S. that would support him.
Yeah.
And as long as they market this right, and horror movies tend to do really well, or so-so here in the U.S.
Looks like he's brought in some other Star Wars talent. His the VFX supervisor is going to be Neil Corbould, who is from Rogue One. He also did work on Gravity, but he's got his own company. That's going to handle the actual creature creation and special effects. So they'll play a pretty central role, but that's good to see. They're keeping Star Wars talent involved.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, now shall we get right into the Dragon Con stuff and kind of, I get to live vicariously through your lives now because I didn't go to Dragon Con. And this, it looks like to be more of a, I'm used to going to cons where it's in one location, maybe an outlier spot for something else if they have overflow. But Dragon Con seems a little decentralized to me. From what you guys have been talking about, going to different hotels and different convention halls to see different things. Why don't you guys just kind of give me an overview of what Dragon Con was all about?
Tim, I want to hear your. This was your first Dragon Con, so you take the lead on this. I want to hear what your impression was overall.
Just to talk about the physical space here for a moment, Dragon Con is spread out among four or five different hotels. You had the Westin, the Sheraton, the Hilton, the Marriott Marquis, and the Hyatt in Atlanta. And they're all very close to each other. In fact, the Hyatt, the Marriott, and the Hilton all have pedestrian bridges that connect each one of them together, which is awfully nice. It is... From the feel of it, you can tell it is very much fan run. It is not a quote corporate type of con like New York City Comic Con is or Star Wars Celebration is, which has some positive and negative things. I would say mostly positive things, being that you get, I think there are topics that cater a little bit more toward what fans want to hear. And there are, I don't know, Tom, there's what? Probably at the height of it, there's like 20 different tracks.
Yeah. And when he says a track, he's talking a specific set of programming. And the way Dragon Con has it set up, these tracks of programming are set around a specific either franchise or topic. So Star Wars has its own track. Dedicated track of events. Space, for example, as an offshot, has its own track where folks from NASA come in and talk, or you've got different scientists, astronomers, that sort of stuff. So that's what he means. So you're talking 20 or so different, like full-on, full-fledged schedules all mashed into one schedule.
Now, before you guys go, what does that mean? Like, if I wanted to see the space track, I'd be able to kind of see all that stuff without having to worry about missing something because I wanted to go see something else. Is it like made that way?
Only if you have a time turner from Harry Potter. You do then. That's the real challenge with the show. And Tim, you probably experienced this because I think you had more of a potpourri experience this time around.
Yeah. And I mean, the Dragon Con app is fantastic because as you go through kind of the full con agenda, you can look at, you know, you see a panel that you're interested in, and you can flag it, and they'll put it on your schedule. And then you're going through them, and you're seeing another one, and you flag that, and you put that on your schedule. And through much of the con, there were time spaces that I had two or sometimes three, and I think once or twice even four different panels that I wanted to attend within that same time frame. And so I kind of had to make it like a game day decision of which one I was going to go to. And some of it was just a, you know what, here's my inclination at the moment. Others were particularly like on Saturday, with how crowded Saturday was in the middle of the day. Hey, you know what? I'm all the way over in the Hyatt. I am not going to try to get over to the Hilton for this other panel. So one of the ones that I want to see is here in the Hyatt. So I'm just going to hang out here. Because
Tim, where's your dedication, Tim?
Yeah.
And these hotels, there are plenty of small conventions that take place across the country in small hotels, you know, that your local Holiday Inn or something like that, in the conference room or, you know, their ballroom. These are four or five of the biggest hotels in all of Atlanta. I mean, they are tremendously huge. I think you could probably fit the majority of conventions that exist in the United States into one of them in terms of the space that they have, as well as the fans that attend them. And so the con, when I first came, it was, let's see here, the four main hotels. Now it's expanded out. If you want to count the America's Mart, which houses not just the Artist Alley, which has its own floor, but a three floor exhibit space. So your typical exhibit hall, but it's stacked three stories high, plus a gaming area that runs just about 24/7. It's one of the only conventions, and you guys correct me if you've been to one that is like this, but nothing shuts down. Yep. There's 24/7 programming. Now, at 3 a.m., are you going to get, you know, a Star Wars panel? No, but you can go. They were running Blade Runner at 3 a.m. They had movies like that playing through the night. Yep. They had, you know, the fan tracks each will have their own party throughout the weekend. So, like, Star Wars had on Saturday night the last party on Alderaan. You get, like, a DJ and spontaneous lightsaber fights and whatnot. So it really is like a round-the-clock convention that doesn't exist like that, at least officially. I mean, a lot of conventions will break out and there's all sorts of offshot events going on, but this is like official programming straight through the night.
Yeah, I mean, there's one room that they use like exclusively as a movie theater, and they showed a bunch of things, including I think every single one of the MCU movies and a bunch of other things. As Tom said, I mean, you get these parties that'll go on. So like every hotel, or at least the three major hotels, the Hilton, the Hyatt, and the Marriott, would each have, I think every night, usually two big parties. There was like one in the lobby, which was kind of like an unofficial party. And in, depending on the hotel, they may or may not have a DJ. And then they would have one of the ballrooms that they would turn basically into a nightclub. And, you know, you could walk in and out of these. I think the bars in every hotel opened like at noon, right? So it, you know, that was kind of cool that you could like grab a beer, grab a glass of wine, grab a mixed drink, whatever you want, and you can go to panels and you could walk from hotel to hotel because they were connected. But
what's funny is, a former Georgia resident, this is just a uniqueness. If you live anywhere in the South, you know this very well, but Georgia has blue laws, like any good Southern state does, which restricts the sale of alcohol on Sunday.
Oh, we
Dragon
have those in
Con
Connecticut
is
too.
One of,
I thought it was just us.
Normally you got to get your Sunday beer on Saturday, but at Dragon Con, the convention is one of a few entities that has to get a yearly exemption granted from the Georgia State Legislature the hotels have to get that to be able to sell alcohol on Sunday. And Sunday's still a a big day because this convention goes each year into Monday, Labor Day, which is mainly like the hangover day for most folks. But it's a big alcohol selling day for them. So it really is. Tim, I sold this convention to you. Not that you went because I said anything about it, but I sold this as probably one of the most diverse conventions in terms of programming and just a fun experience. And I'm curious. You don't have to sugarcoat it. You can tell me if you were disappointed, but what was your overall impression?
Oh, my overall impression was very positive. I had a lot of fun. I had a good time. It was certainly helpful having you there kind of as a touch point to early on help me orient myself and figure things out. But absent that, I, you know, certainly could have done it on my own. I know there are a lot of first timers there this year that were able to do that. And I mean, after all, you know, everyone there is really friendly. I mean, you're there with 80,000 of your best friends, and they are more than willing to help and share. And standing in lines, I will tell you, their line management is far superior to any other con I've ever been to.
Wow.
The best line management. First of all, lines don't form until an hour before a panel starts. There's no lining up hours in advance or overnight or none of that crap. It's an hour before and that's it. And usually they're kind of forced into it because they're turning over rooms over and over. So you can't be in line that long because you would be interfering with a line for another panel in that same room. Mm-hmm. So they are really, really good at line management. It's fantastic. I had no problems. I got into everything that I wanted to. And, you know, talking to people in line, talking to people at the parties, talking to people in panels, it was just fantastic. And it was really a lot of fun. So
the difference, if you guys are listening and you've been to one of these like more corporate conventions at San Diego, New York Celebration, one of these, the difference I would say is, especially in more recent years, and I'm specifically thinking of the last two celebrations, specifically since Disney took over and we got a lot of new content, more and more those conventions have felt like a four-day horse race. There's a horse race to get in line, there's a horse race to get the exclusive Lego item, there's just this constant. You feel pent up all weekend, and for no good reason. You just want to go enjoy a panel and hear folks talk about Star Wars, and instead you're worried about outracing the guy or the girl to your left or your right. And I can't tell you how refreshing it is. Now, you're not going to get exclusive items at Dragon Con. You're not going to have Lego come there and hand out 200 new sets of something that you can flip on eBay. And you're not going to have... You're not going to have Hasbro come and do an exclusive panel on the toys that are upcoming and whatnot. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, at least right now, Lucasfilm is not going to go there and debut any new footage. But it is so refreshing year after year to do exactly what you said, Tim. Plan your schedule and know that the only thing that's going to keep you from those events that you've scheduled is if you go to something else in that same time slot. It's just for a convention that's that big, because it's got as many people as show up at Celebration or really just about any show except I think New York and San Diego. It is just a really, really good experience from that standpoint. And it's a fair trade off.
And for as much of a party environment as Tom and I mentioned, it's obviously absent very late at night in some of these parties. I mean, it's not like people are walking around drunk at all or anything. So, I mean, even though you can start getting drinks at noon, it's people are into the con. So they're not in that party mode until much later in the evening.
It's very family friendly. Very much so. I think you can walk around with kids. There are folks that I've seen their kids grow up coming to the Star Wars panel or the Star Wars track. And this is one of I will say the best way I can describe this con is it is infinitely customizable. And Tim, I think you saw a slice of that. If you just want to go to Star Wars events, that's mainly what I did this year. You can do that. If you just want to go to the parties, you can do that. Heck, Tim and I spent a fair bit of time just sitting and having a beer and looking and picking out random costumes that were really unique and funny. I mean, you can do that for the whole weekend.
Incredible.
Yeah. I will say, on a side note, cosplay second to none at this convention. Really? I've been
nice.
I've been to everything except for New York and Salt Lake, and I don't think either of those can top what you see here in terms of the scale of the cosplay, the creativity, the ingenuity. It's
second to none. Because so many of the gatherings are in lobbies of these very large hotels, which have like multiple levels that overlook the lobbies, or in some cases, multiple levels of lobby. You know, you've got a lobby level, a mezzanine level, et cetera, et cetera. You can get yourself up on the, you know, third or fourth floor, and you're just looking down on the masses, and you just see awesome things. So,
I think my favorite moment, this might have been late on Friday night, but Tim and I are hanging out in the looking down in on the Hilton lobby, which had been at that point turned into a dance floor. And there's a full scale 80s cartoon Megatron dancing,
huge,
dancing his tail
like
off, 12 by the way,
feet tall.
On stilts and everything. Nice. And he had a very small, I don't know if it was like a girlfriend or like whoever partner, but dressed as Soundwave, very, very short.
That's awesome.
Amazing costumes, but just, couldn't be happier, like rocking out to the DJ. That was one of my favorite.
It was
moments.
Fun. Awesome. So, Tom, one thing I'd like to do sometime in the near future is probably do like a Patreon exclusive thing where you and I just kind of debrief a little bit on Dragon Con, like as a whole.
But
that'd be cool.
Specific to this show here, since we are Star Wars, I kind of wanted to, the reason why I want to have you on was to talk about your experiences since you were on a number of panels for Star Wars. You were a moderator for a couple of them. And then you were an attendee for a number of others. So what were some of the highlights that you experienced through Dragon Con in that regard?
So I was on, for those of you out there, I was on five panels. I moderated.
Is that all?
Two on Friday. Brandy, who directs and organizes the Star Wars track, had emailed me at the beginning of the month. She was like, my first draft had you on 10. Like, are you trying to murder me? In any event, I moderated two. I moderated a discussion on Vice Admiral Holdo from The Last Jedi. And I moderated a politics and crime panel.
That was so good.
And then I was on a discussion of Luke Skywalker on Monday morning. I moderated three. I forgot about, I moderated a collecting panel.
Now, Tom, did you get to put anybody else on trial this time, or?
I didn't. We're going to try to do that next time. I've got to recruit some East Coast talent, because all the San Diego and all the stuff the Legal Geeks does is, it's a lot of West Coast talent, so I need to mix up my lineup. But we're looking to do one next year. But in any event, nobody was put on trial. Nobody got sent to Rua Pente at this convention. But I had the Luke Skywalker panel, a Star Wars collecting panel that I moderated, and the last one was a First Order versus the Empire military themes panel. I don't want to be like too biased, but The politics and crime panel was a lot of fun. It was just a good deep dive discussion. We barely even got to the crime stuff. I normally try to keep my panels more or less on track through our outline. And I looked at my watch and it was like 40 minutes had gone by. And I was like, we hadn't even clicked over into the crime part. But it was just a good discussion. I felt bad when I had to press the gas pedal down and get the panelists to move
on. Your politics and crime panel, Tom, that was a panel that could have gone on. I mean, these panels are an hour long. This panel could have gone on at least 2 hours, if not longer, and I still would have been completely riveted and interested. the nice. Way that you organized it and the panelists that you had were fantastic. And I mean, we're talking, obviously the panelists are Star Wars fans, but they have legit creds. I mean, you had other folks who serve in the military. You've got folks in the intelligence community. You've got folks who are doing different things and kind of have a great way of merging their, you know, quote, day jobs with their fandom. And just like you do with like Legal Geeks. And it brings such an incredible perspective, and it's really a deep dive, and they were just fascinating to listen to.
I appreciate it. I don't know if you recorded any, and I
did not.
But there's Tashi Station, which is another podcast network that's out there, recorded. I know they recorded everything that I was on. And so if you're looking for audio of any of these panels, they're all, they've got the full sort of Golden Corral menu served up over on their site, and you can check them out. I know they recorded everything. And then the Beltway Banthas Star Wars Politics podcast, they got several of them. But no, it was good. The panels are always fun. And the thing I like about the Dragon Con panel specifically are that I'm not there to see a slideshow about Hasbro releasing new product, like what new action figure is coming out, just so I can tweet it. I'm there to like deep dive and really nerd out about Star Wars and really get some good discussion. And that's what I love the most about Dragon Con. And I think we're going to pitch a politics panel to Celebration. I hope that they start picking up more stuff like that. I had the pleasure and the privilege of presenting that kind of panel at the last Celebration. So hopefully they'll open the door again. Outside of the stuff that I did in like the traditional fan panels, I think, well, one fan panel that I had a ton of fun at was it was an awkward script reading. And Tim, you were there for me or there with me for this one. So it was a college professor that had taken excerpts line by line from Star Wars scripts. And she was pulling folks out of the audience to read them. They'd be in character, say, as Anakin and Padme, and they would read the scripts in character however they wanted to. They could.
Yeah.
You know, put an accent on it, whatever the case may
be.
Oh
my gosh.
And she was trying to test this thesis. Is it the acting in Star Wars or is it the writing? And it was so funny. I mean, they got kids involved. They did find a couple drunk people that got involved. But it was just, I think you and I were, I about.
So did you get video of Tim on stage then when you talk about drunk people on stage? No,
I did not participate, but my gosh, I think
we might have been two of the only people that didn't. Yeah, so that was a good one. And then they always have a strong contingent of Star Wars authors out there. Mm-hmm. So they had both from EU or Legends and current day. This year they had E.K. Johnston, who did the Ahsoka novel and has the upcoming Padme novel coming out. They had Tim Zahn, who needs no introduction, and they had help me with her name. She did the Dark Disciple book. I'm totally blanking on her name. Phenomenal author. So those three from the new books, and then they had several from the old series. Kevin J. Anderson and the author of the X-Wing series, and I'm blanking on his name as well. Stackpole. Yep. They did a collective panel all together, just a collective author panel talking about both old and new Star Wars stuff.
Christy Gold, absolutely is phenomenal. Who you're looking for?
Yep.
Christy Gold, thank you. Absolutely phenomenal. Tim Zahn also did his own panel just on Thrawn, which was also really, really good.
Yeah.
The authors panel, Tim Zahn gave probably the single best piece of advice about this division between Legends and current canon. And I think I would get this printed on a banner and have it flown behind a plane if I could. But the substance of it, and he repeated it in Thrawn, and I hope that he repeats this at every convention that he goes to, because I know people kept asking him, people that cared very passionately about the EU and now Legends, who were, you know, obviously still wounded about the decision. But to both the audience members that asked him this question, and they did not ask, and neither audience member asked it to him in a particularly objective or like level-headed way. It was posed to him just making it very clear that the person that was asking it was just pretty upset still about the decision. And so Tim Zahn essentially said that these stories are not and haven't been cast away, and they shouldn't be by fandom. And really, they haven't been. They're treated like the tales of King Arthur or Paul Bunyan. They're tales that we tell around the campfire, we tell to our kids, we tell to each other. The best current example of that is the Legends of Luke Skywalker book. You don't know reading that whether those stories are true or false. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter. And that was his point, that it doesn't matter that if you're reading his original trilogy from the early 90s or the X-Wing series by Stackpole, it shouldn't matter whether these stories are true or not. What should matter is that you're having fun, that they're good stories, and that folks enjoy mm-hmm. them. And they're not going away. They're not certainly not coming off of store shelves anytime soon. And they're not going to, they haven't just suddenly disappeared from your own shelves. And I thought that was one of the most articulate ways, and I certainly butchered it in my delivery here, but it was just so well thought out and hit the nail right on the head. And I hope that the folks that asked the question, you know, took it to heart and walked away. And I certainly, I'm staring right now at my entire shelf of Legends books. And those stories meant a lot to me as a kid growing up.
Yep.
But to hear one of the guys that was in on it from the ground floor put it into those terms was really, really powerful.
Well, that's awesome. And he also, he was kind of asked a similar question in his own panel, and kind of gave a similar version of the same answer, which I thought was great. And it was very well received by people. I mean, there's no reason to hate this stuff. It still exists.
Yeah.
They're still drawing from it terrifically. You know, they've done so much with it. And
you know, if the guy that wrote some of this stuff can accept that and not be bitter about it, I think us as fans can accept it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's clear he loves Thrawn is near and dear to his heart. Don't ever mistake.
Yeah.
Tim Zahn is not the guy that's just cashing checks and walking away from the project to the next project. This is a guy who deeply cares about the lore that he's created. That much, you could talk to him for 2 seconds and get that much. What was really neat was hearing him talk about the future plans that are percolating, at least in his own head. Mm-hmm. None of this is official because stuff is always in the works, but he is always looking for the next project for Thrawn especially. And he gave a little tidbit that his original ending for the original Thrawn book, if you've read it, you're familiar with the character Eli Vanto, who's sort of his understudy, the Watson to Thrawn's Holmes.
Yes.
And at the end of the book, Eli Vanto transitions and gets to go off and join the Chiss Ascendancy. We don't see a whole lot of it, but his original ending for it was Eli having sort of a premonition, and he wakes up in his quarters aboard his Star Destroyer and calms the bridge and says, "I have our next target. Here are the coordinates." And then it ends mm-hmm. as the Star Destroyer jumps to hyperspeed. And I was like, oh, I got chills when I heard that come out.
Nice.
And yeah, Zahn mentioned a number of different stories that he wants to pitch that involve Thrawn, both going forward as well as looking back. And essentially, he's kind of been told to just like sit down with his hands underneath him for the time being while they figure out what's happening with Episode 9 and with the Clone Wars, this new final season of the Clone Wars that's coming out, and with other projects that are in the works. Because I mean Zahn is very eager to get into a lot of characters, not just Thrawn, but also other characters, and maybe include those characters in Thrawn novels and that kind of stuff. So he has a lot of thoughts on different character arcs. And yeah, so for the time being, he's just kind of been told just sit and be quiet. But yeah, he does have a lot of great ideas for it. So,
which is good, because if you are a Thrawn fan, either in writing or in the books or from the Rebel series, what that means is that they may not be done with him. He couldn't speak to anything specifically, obviously, but there's enough of an interest there that they're not just letting him write 15 more Thrawn books right now out of the gate.
Now, as we had mentioned earlier, Tom, you were involved in the Star Wars trivia contest that's held annually at Dragon Con. You have won, what, the last 2 years?
Yes. So you're opening a new wound, a fresh wound.
Spoiler alert. I am.
I'll cut right to the chair. I didn't win this year.
And Tim's holding the salt shaker. I can see it now.
Hey, I was there rooting for him. I was in the front row. It was a heck of a thing. So they start this whole thing off with Saturday doing a, you actually do a pencil and paper test, right? Like a qualification test.
Yeah.
Now, how many people participated in that?
They usually have, I don't know the final number this year, but the average is about 90 to 100 folks that take the test. Wow. So you're talking 50 multiple choice questions, A, B, C, D. And I wish that it were structured in a way that it made it easy to strike out, say, even one answer and say, that can't be it. That's just totally awful. Captain Picard is not in Star Wars, but the guy who creates it and runs it each year is just on another level.
Oh my gosh.
And he makes it extraordinarily difficult.
Wow. Yeah, he has like an eidetic memory when it comes to Star Wars stuff. I mean, watching him host the live trivia event was just fantastic, because he's able to throw around pronunciation of names and flavor text into things, and you know, he goes off script from his questions and he'll add a little more explanation of something. And it's just all off the cuff that he knows this stuff solidly.
He'll correct you too. If you tried, there were a couple moments where somebody tried to challenge him, and he'll be more than happy to correct you.
Yeah. But it's pretty solid.
He's been running it for a while. So you get 50 questions on the multiple choice. Normally they always take the top 10 scores, mm-hmm. and usually the average to make it to the final is about 37 to 38,
right.
which gives you an idea. So you're talking missing 12 questions on a 50 question test. And that kind of puts it into a stark perspective. And then the low score to make it in is usually a 33, which also puts it into perspective. This year they were skewed higher than they have been. He's been running it since 2010, but hit the reset to current canon in 2015. Mm. So entering this year, I had never qualified before, back when the old EU was involved, just because I didn't keep up with that material. But when they hit the reset, I was like, okay, this is my chance to get competitive. Sure. In something that I like doing. And so I came in second the first year and then first. So, it's like being the New England Patriots when you like come into this year, everybody's gunning for you. So turbo lasers are on.
So you made the cut of the top 10 from the qualification test, and you had like a 40 something, right?
Yeah, I had a 42, which was, fourth, something like that. So my philosophy on that qualifier is you're just battling to get a seat at the table. Right. I mean, you could get 50 out of 50 and it would do you no good on the final test.
And there were some incredible minds who made that top 10, including a kid who was what, 10?
Yeah, he's been putting in work. Miles is his name. He's one of my he and his parents cosplay every year.
Oh, sweet.
Like coordinated costumes.
He did a young Boba Fett.
Nice.
This year.
Yeah. And I think his mom was Aura Singh and his dad was Hondo.
Oh, cool.
Which is funny, because there's an episode of the Clone Wars, if you guys remember, where Aura Singh goes back to Florum and runs into Hondo, and he sees young Boba, and he's like, not mine, I assume. So they're taking the cosplay to another level on that one.
But the finals
are obviously top 10 scores, and then it's structured, mirrored on the National Geography B. And so if you're not familiar with that, the first round is 10 or is it 15 round robin questions, A, B, multiple choice. And again, the A and the B both sound right.
Yeah, in a lot of cases they do. I mean, there were some, I mean, as he's going through each 10 questions, you know, running through each of the 10 qualifying people, you know, there were times where I'm getting maybe three of them right. There are some that I may be getting five or six. There were some that, and that's not even counting the guesses. That's not even me saying, I don't know, A. That's not even counting. That's just simply counting my knowledge of these things. And these run really, really deep. And there were some that I'm like, I don't know. And clearly some of the panelists, you know, some of the panelists lucked out with guesses because you could clearly tell that, I don't know, A, whatever.
Yeah. When he, at least one or two of the rounds in there are themed. Yes. So one, every question was Jar Jar Binks related.
Yeah, I loved it.
And you're like, oh, that's easy. How hard could Jar Jar Binks questions be? And then you hear them.
Now, do you guys have any examples of what these questions were?
Yeah. So on the Jar Jar note, one of the questions that the person got this wrong, but what did – so everybody knows Jar Jar was banished from Oda Gunga in The Phantom Menace, or when Phantom Menace came around. What did he get banished for destroying? A, an oven, or B, the oxygen tanks that provide oxygen to the city?
Oh, God.
Yeah, right, see?
I'm like, yeah, okay, he's just being clumsy, but
Jar Jar is so easy. He destroyed an oven. Yeah. So, now you know.
The Jar Jar lore ran deep that night. Maxi big.
But yeah, so then the Tim, you mentioned this earlier, they'll cut to five, mm-hmm. the top five scores there. And the final panelist, not only did that kid Miles know his stuff, but you've also, if you're out there and watch Star Wars Explained on YouTube, which I think Alex has got 500,000 subscribers right now, but he's up there in the finals. You've got some folks that really, really know their Star mm-hmm. Wars stuff and put in work to get there. Alex alone was on Collider Schmodown for Star Wars, I think twice in the few months before we came into Dragon Con. Meanwhile, I'm changing diapers and learning to put a baby to sleep. But Tim, you mentioned the second round after they cut to five is picture trivia. So they go through, an image will flash up, and it's a you know, it could be a location, a ship,
a weapon,
a character. The first one was an image of Arlani, who's the only other Chiss character that's shown up in canon mm-hmm. other than Thrawn. And she was in one of the issues of the Thrawn comic. You had an image of Cato Nemoidia, which I'm not sure where he pulled that image from. I'm used to seeing it. You see it briefly in Revenge of the Sith, because that's where Plo Koon gets shot down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you're getting images, and all you've got is a whiteboard and a marker in front of you, and you've just got a few seconds to jot down what it is. Then they cut down to the top three best scorers at that point, and it's sudden death. And you're just getting asked questions, and you have to write down the answer.
And the sudden death ones were tough. I mean, there were some that all three of you were getting right, and then some that all three of you were getting wrong. Mm-hmm. And then came the fatal blow.
I don't think he made it more than 10 questions. I don't think it ran more than 10 in the sudden death. But so the question was, who was the senator from Alderaan in 32 BBY? And I went to my pad and I wrote Bail, And then I wrote Antilles / Organa. And I stared at the last names. And in a fit of what I can only describe as con dad brain, like a Superstorm Sandy kind of brain fart, I erased Antilles, forgetting totally about the scene in The Phantom Menace where Chancellor Valorum is all happy that he's, or excuse me, Chancellor or Senator Palpatine is all happy that he's gotten nominated for the chancellorship. And Bail Organa, who's just hanging out, comes in and says that Senator Bail Antilles and Ain Lee Team of Malastare have also been nominated. Mm-hmm. That went right out of my head, and I put Bail Organa and got out. And then the entire, it went one more question. The question that decided it, the very next one, was who is the only other Twi'lek dancer in Jabba's palace that we see other than Ula? And that would be Lin May, who's the blue Twi'lek, who is in the Max Rebo band. She's added in the special edition. Mm-hmm. So, and I knew that one. I have this like character book, it's just a book full of an image of a character and a few little call outs about him. And I just keep it. It's like a bathroom book. I just keep it in there. And I, for some reason, that character stuck in my brain by virtue of that book. And so that question got asked, it decided it. Alex from Star Wars Explained got second, and a very, very knowledgeable guy named Zach came in first. Very well deserved, but that was it. So I'm mounting my third place certificate. I made my daughter, I made Evie stare at it. I was like, you can't read any of these words, but you caused this.
Wow.
But next year, Tom will be back to challenge again.
I will. And Marissa had told me going into this, she was like, well, if you win and that's three in a row, you've got to just walk away. Like you can't go back and do it again. And I was like, well, but I could battle for four in a row. And she was like, that's silly. rightfully so. But I called her after the third place came down, and I was a little dejected. And she said, well, there's always next year.
There you go.
And there so you go.
The seed is planted.
There you go.
Well, Tom, I know that hurts to talk about, but I'm glad you told us. And it sounds amazing. I would love to go see this trivia contest.
It's in a world of its own. Yeah, it's the gold standard.
And it was fun to watch. I mean, the room is packed for it, and everyone is really excited. And of course, you know, you can tell like the answers that the audience knows, and then answers the audience is like, wow, where did this come from? and again, you know, kudos to the folks who even made the top 10. And the guy who runs the whole thing, who, like I said, is just awesome. I mean, if he were a competitor, I don't know that anyone could take him off of first place. I mean, he knows this stuff. So it's not like he's just sitting there, you know, reading stuff off of Wikipedia and writing questions off of it. You can tell he legit knows this stuff.
He works all year on the material for the next year. He does not reuse questions. And to hear him talk about his process, his aim is to write 1 to 2 questions per day. He's not obviously writing questions every day, but it's a year-long process for him. So he takes it very seriously. Yeah. And that's on top of consuming the new material. So this quiz, this year's test included everything that's come out since 2017. So you're talking 2 new movies, what, 22 episodes of Rebels. I don't know, 50 comics or so across the spectrum. And I couldn't even tell you how many books, including YA books, have come out since August of last year.
There was stuff in there from Thrawn Alliances. I mean, it was right up to date. So, you know, the one comic book that Tom might have skipped could have been, you know, the key. So, which is why Tom did not skip
Bail Antilles. Bail Antilles better never get his own comic book.
Oh, boy. Well, I think that brings us to the end of another episode here, unless you have anything else you want to add in last minute.
Nope.
No, that that pretty awesome. Well,
Tom, thank you very much for joining us tonight. It was entertaining and fun as usual. I'm a bit intimidated by your Star Wars knowledge, but I will bow to your impressiveness. So,
don't worry, it fades over time. It's red hot from like June through early September, and then it fades really quickly.
Like he couldn't even. You'll tell see you who me at Yoda Celebration, right,
and I won't know. Yeah, you'll see me at Celebration. I'll be like Doug Vader. I don't know.
No, it's Chad Vader. Chad Vader.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. If you have any feedback for us or anything you want to talk about for this show exactly, send us an email to echobase@randomchatter.com. You can find us online on Twitter. We can find us at Force Chatter for the Star Wars stuff. You can find us at Random Chatter for the rest of the network. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Skywalker. That's Skywalker without the E. Tim, where can people find you?
At Qui-Gon Tim. It's Tim with two M's.
And Tom, where can they find you on Twitter?
The most inventive Twitter name ever. Thomas, at Thomas L, L as in Larry, Harper.
H-A-R. Is that L as in Larry all spelled out, or just...
I wish it was like L as in I lost on bail and...
okay, you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com.
We certainly appreciate everyone spreading the word and supporting us. Please leave us some reviews, places wherever you find this podcast, like iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. But we just had, I think 7 people just leave us new reviews over on Guardians of the MCU, which was awesome. So thank you very much to them. And don't stop there. I mean, please leave us reviews for Echo Base and any other podcast that you listen to. It's a huge help. We love it, and yeah, it's just awesome. So, you know, click on all the stars, write in, take a couple minutes just to write a sentence or two about why you like us, and that'll help other people find us. Word of mouth is huge for podcasts, so please tell your friends, family members, coworkers, anyone who you know who likes Star Wars about us. And you can also join us in our Discord community. Go to randomchatter.com/Discord, and it's basically a series of online discussion rooms, and you can talk about all sorts of things in there. Heading over to randomchatter.com/Discord will get you into our publicly accessible parts of Discord, which is our lobby and our showrooms. So our rooms like for Echo Base and Guardians of the MCU and Dispatches from the Front, which Tom and I co-host. You can get into those rooms to talk about those shows. And there are, I think, seriously, like another 50 rooms that you can get to. And the way to unlock those is by way of Patreon. So if you head over to randomchatter.com/Patreon, donating just $1 a month, which is a huge help to us, will get you access to all of those other rooms. And we talk about all sorts of things to a variety of depth. We have some spoiler discussion rooms on things like episode 9. And we talk about TV shows and movies and all sorts of stuff. But your contributions to us are a huge help. They help us keep the lights on around here. So again, randomchatter.com/Patreon. Thank you very much for your support.
And of course, the music you hear on the podcast is the Imperial March by Cell Dweller. At this point, we're going to close the blast doors and come back at you in about a week. It's a trap.